There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Thursday. Glad to have y'all along this hour. Live local talk. Phone number, text line 343-0106. 343-0106. My buddy Brendan Kirby joins us in just a second. I do want to answer... I'll answer one of these texts for sure because I think it's worth doing here. A texter said, we just talked to State Senator Cam Ward about where we are with building prisons in Alabama, something that he has been working on, if you remember correctly. He's been working on, well, he said he's been doing it on this show, been on the show with us since 2013 talking about this when he was tasked by former Governor Bentley to look at this, and nothing gets done. We have this possibility of federal receivership, and if you look at what happened in California, that's a big deal. So we're talking about the rumor I'd heard coming out of Montgomery. That's kind of why I had the senator on, that Governor Kay Ivey could move here through the executive branch to do something about it. And the idea would be, I guess, the state of Alabama would put out a RFP, would put out to have a private company, and there are only so many private companies in the country that can build prisons, come in and build prisons for the state. Then we, the people, the state, would rent, lease the prisons from the private company, and still have the prisons staffed with Alabama DOC, so corrections officers from Alabama, and then pay rent to this entity. It would keep there from having being a bond issue, of course, and would keep the members of the legislature out of it too, to that degree, because there's a couple things. There's, number one, the economics of it, right? There's some people that say, NIMBY here, not in my backyard. I don't want a prison in my backyard. There's also places in the state that have prisons in their own backyard that don't want them to go because of what it means for revenue. So that's part of the discussion. And it gets gunched up in the legislature. It does not get done. That has been proven. It does not get done. So the governor would move to do this and have the state in the business. We'd be renting a prison from a private entity and pay them rent from here on out, I guess. This text I wanted to answer real quickly here. Texter said, why not contract our prisons to people like the GEO Group? Florida does it and saves them tons of money. No state employees, and they assume the liability of maintaining the buildings, employees, etc. Here's where we will go from the objective to the subjective, unnamed texter. And this, you'll have your opinion, I'll have mine. Maybe they'll come together. I've watched private prison stories, read them, looked into them. Not so much Florida. I looked at Louisiana. And there's, Lord knows, my libertarian bent, I want to privatize a lot of things. Prisons is not one of them, just because of what I saw as an example in Louisiana. You had the lobbying group, which I believe the prison groups have all the right to lobby, right? They have everybody wants to lobby politicians, so they did in Louisiana. They were lobbying and pushing for changes to the law, the criminal code in Louisiana, that would have had more people arrested because those corporations are doing what they're supposed to do. I hate this idea. Oh, they're evil corporations. Corporations are supposed to make money. That's why they exist. It's why you hang out the shingle and sell the shares, right? But in that, you have a situation where you have not somebody lobbying for an exemption. They were lobbying to have stricter penalties and changes to the law because it would benefit the private prison, because the more prisoners in there, the more the prison makes. I do not want the motivation, as much as I love the clear, pure, solid motivation of profit. I like it in almost all places. One of those places I don't like it in is in the prison system, because then there's an economic reason to lobby, members of the legislature or whatever group to try to get criminal code changed so you put people in a prison so the company makes money. Now, if you don't see the danger in that, the Teflon-coated, Wesson oil-coated slip and slide of that baby, I don't think you're looking. So that's why. I mean, yes, yeah, I'm usually a fan. You want to privatize things. I'm like, all aboard. Corrections, the law, not one of those places. All right. So there. But listen, we'll talk about it again going forward, because Brendan's been holding on for a while, and he's going to hang up on me if I don't get to him soon. Hey, Brendan.
Hey, I'd never hang up on you.
Sure, buddy. Brendan Kirby, author of Wicked Mobile, also the host over at KirbyOnPolitics.com. Before we get into the list of things we have to talk about here, and if y'all have got any questions about vaccines, not vaccinating, all that, we're about to get into that in depth. But any reaction? Did I misstate anything on private prisons?
Yeah, no, I think so. Listening to your intro there, and it occurs to me that if you're going to have private prisons, you'd want to align the incentive to what your goal is, right? Because people, not just corporations, but people are all about incentives. People respond to incentives.
Mm-hmm.
So if you tell the private prison company, we're going to pay you X number of dollars for each prisoner, then their incentive is to have as many prisoners as possible, right?
Sure, they're doing what they're supposed to do.
Right, but what if you change the incentive and said, we're going to base the income on how many people don't come back to prison? Something similar to, there's a provision of Obamacare that penalizes hospitals for readmissions. And the idea is, we don't want just the hospital just to slap a Band-Aid on a person and get them out of there because they want to, have the cheapest possible, health delivery that possible if they're just going to come back. So if a hospital has too many people coming back to the hospital within a certain number of days after the discharge, they're penalized. It seems to me, potentially construct something like that so that, okay, the incentive of the prison company is not to maximize the numbers of people in prison, but to maximize the number of people who are actually rehabilitated and not coming back.
Right, so their benefit.
I don't know if anyone's ever tried that,
no,
but that seems like that's what you want to do.
Interesting thought. I love it. Thinking of different ways to approach this, they would get their bonus based on the lower the recidivism rate, the more of a bonus they got. But then again, they would probably also, at that point, just to stay with this rabbit hole, if I'm that company, then I would be, once again, lobbying the legislature to try to change laws to make sure fewer prisoners came back to me. So I could, and because that's the profit incentive. And it
right.
The
well,
company,
I mean,
does what it's supposed to do.
The prison, I mean, we call it the corrections system.
Correct.
Right? And the reason is because the goal is where we want to rehabilitate prisoners so that they won't come back. We haven't done a very good job of that. The recidivism rate is very high. But theoretically, the idea is we're not just going to put people behind bars. I mean, that was like the early days of prison. That's what we did. We just separated people. And then I think it was probably in the 19th century that this idea that we would do rehabilitation first came into being. And, that's why prisoners can get drug treatment and counseling and mental health services, and they can get the GED, and all of that is with the aim of making sure people don't go back. So, if that was the incentive, since the public sector hasn't done a very good job at it, maybe someone from the private sector can figure out a better way to do that. And if they can, and they can get rewarded for it, that would benefit everyone.
Now, there we go.
I'm not endorsing it. I mean, I haven't thought this out. This is just sort of my off-the-cuff thinking.
And I just threw that one at you. So, fair enough. I'll tell you what, we're going to run to the quick news break, and we'll come back because Brendan has a lot more stuff to talk about with us. You heard the measles story? How did we get there in this country? What about herd immunity? What's changed out there? Well, we'll talk about that and a whole lot more with Brendan Kirby when we return right here on FM Talk 106.5. And yes, there is a suggestion here, Chester, if the Porch Creek Indians would build a new prison if they could have gaming rights in it. We'll see what the legislature says about that.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5, and is Midday Mobile. I want to point out here that this has grown. It's like anything. It's like a little hatchling that is now ready to fly. This this suggestion here from Chester on the text line to have the Porch Creek Indians build the new prisons and give them Class 3 gaming rights. I don't know if that means giving them the Class 3 gaming rights just in general for that, because I've argued, even though we're going to do lottery, which I've said is the wine spritzer of the gambling world, that's going to be discussed in session this year. We should just decide, either we're going to gamble or not. I think Chester's saying just balance us out with the Creeks. You know, they build, they pay for the prisons, they get to have full gaming in the state. But we took it one more level up and decided that the Creeks would build these prisons, and the prisons, half of them would be the prison, the other half would be the gaming facility. And Brendan, you were talking about in trying to get people rehabilitated, you said they could learn a skill. The prisoners could actually work the casino.
Right. I mean, if you had a prison / casino, the prisoners would provide the labor. You know, they'd be the blackjack dealers and the cocktail waitresses and whatnot. And, you know, it would be much cheaper to staff a casino at prison labor rates. And then they learn a marketable skill, right? I mean, the blackjack dealer, when he finishes his sentence, can go get a job as a blackjack dealer in Mississippi. And it's a win-win, right?
I love it. I love it. You're brave, man. I love it. All right. And we've got lots of people holding on that. We may get to, in the second half of this hour, y'all want to call back and we can talk more about this. But Brendan didn't come on for this. I just blindsided him with it. Came on because a story that you posted up, I think, 2 days ago over at KirbyOnPolitics.com. Why do states grant religious exemptions for vaccines? Now, I've heard of this before, but not really thought about it nearly as in-depth as you and done the research. Talk to me about this story.
Well, yeah, what triggered this was the recent outbreak in Washington State. 2 or 3 dozen kids have come down with the measles in a county that's outside of Portland, Oregon. And Washington and Oregon both have fairly low immunization rates compared to the states, and they're pretty liberal with their exemptions. And, you know, it's something I've kind of thought about a little bit, you know, because almost every state gives religious exemptions, all but three. It's California, Mississippi, and West Virginia are the only ones that do not grant non-medical exemptions. All the rest grant exemptions based on religious objections. And this is fairly common in a lot of stuff. You know, we are a very accommodating country. We bend over backwards to accommodate minority religions. You know, we have special diets for Jewish and Muslim prisoners, for instance, so that they don't go against their beliefs. And it's ingrained kind of in the American experience. But I got to wondering, what exactly is the religious objection to vaccines? Because I'm not aware of any. So I went looking into it. There was actually a very in-depth academic study a few years ago in the journal Vaccine. And this guy looked at what all of the organized religions had to say about vaccination. He went through all of them and could not find any faith that had any doctrinal objection to vaccines, except for, you know, a couple of really small churches. Christian Scientists, you know, they believe in the power of prayer, and they counsel praying rather than seeking medical attention of any kind. So they potentially would have an objection to vaccines, although he quotes the founder of that church as saying that, you know, if push comes to shove and the law requires it, you should follow the law and then, you know, and then pray, essentially.
Right.
And then the Dutch Reformed Church, a very small Christian church, they have objections dating back to the 1800s to vaccinations, and there was a pretty severe outbreak several years ago in the Netherlands that was attributed to this. So, you know, almost no religion has any objection, but yet most states that have this don't really require much in the way of proof. You just go in and you say, I have an objection. In fact, in New York State a few years ago, two Catholics sought religious exemptions and got them, so they didn't have to immunize their children.
And this is to go to school. This is to go for people to understand. This is, you know, as part of most states, to have your children attend public school, you have to have the, you know, the whatever the blue sheet is or whatever, that they've had these vaccines.
Right. Yeah. And the reason for that is in order for vaccinations to work, almost everyone has to do it. You know, they call it herd immunity. If If you have enough people that are not getting the vaccines, then even people who do have the vaccine are a potential risk, and then there's outbreaks. So it puts everyone at risk. So, you know, and we have these terrible diseases like measles and mumps that used to cause just a tremendous amount of grief. My wife did a story for a newspaper we both worked for in Hagerstown, and it was at the turn of the century, and she did a story on the 20th century of medicine, and she interviewed all of these old doctors, you know, including doctors that used to make house calls on a horse and buggy. You know, they had kind of lived through the whole century. And she asked them all, what is the greatest medical breakthrough of the 20th century? And she was expecting to hear things like, you know, artificial hearts and, you know, fancy gadgetry and that sort of thing. And every single doctor she talked to, every single one said vaccinations, because they had just seen so much horror and tragedy from them. And then when the vaccines came, you know, they didn't have to counsel, you know, grief-stricken parents whose, you know, child died from one of these terrible diseases. We risk it coming back if the immunization level drops. So I guess my point is that if someone has a genuine religious objection and it's a documented objection as to their faith, that's one thing. But, you know, I am a Catholic, and so I know full well the Catholic Church has no doctrinal objection to vaccines. So if someone comes in and says, I'm a Catholic, I have a religious objection, you know, it strikes me that ought not be enough. I mean, you can't just say, well, I don't want... And Washington State, by the way, and 17 other states, they allow for also, in addition to religious objections, philosophical or personal objections. You know, so that basically falls in the category of, I don't want to do it. But even states that don't go that far are usually pretty liberal in granting the exemption on a religious basis. People just assert it, even if there actually is no genuine religious objection, you know, from the faith. So, you know, if all we ever had was, you know, people who had like a medical reason, an allergy or something, and a handful of people from the Dutch Reformed Church and Christian Scientists, I think we would be okay. But if you're granting out lots and lots of these exemptions, then you run the risk of outbreaks like what we saw last week in Washington State.
Right. So, I mean, you're just pointing out, look at the numbers. Look at the numbers of people claiming a religious exemption for vaccines and the number of people that could possibly be members of either of these religions or have a allergy. I mean, the numbers just don't add up. Somebody's gaming the system's
said,
too scared.
The Catholics in New York State, the reason I know about that is because there was a chickenpox outbreak in their school, and the school told them, you got to keep the kids home until this outbreak is cleared. And they were upset about it, and they sued and said, you know, we have a right to send our unvaccinated kids to school, and they ended up losing the lawsuit. But, you know, in the course of reading it, they found out that they were Catholics. And, you know, it just doesn't compute, because the Vatican has no... you know, doctrinal religious objection to vaccination. You know, the Catholic Church has never said anything saying that conflicts with the faith somehow. So, you know, it just strikes me that it seems like there are a lot of people who don't like vaccinations because, you know, they believe in this conspiracy theory that it causes autism or something else. And so therefore, you know, they latch onto this religious exemption as a way to get out of it.
Well, I'm, as you pointed out in your story, you mentioned libertarians, kind of a different slant, but protecting people's right to make choices and sometimes what I think are bad choices is something that is core to my belief. But at the same time, if you are going to engage in, and I'm going to make people angry here, so y'all get ready, state-sponsored education. In other words, all the other people paying in here for the kids to go to school, the state does have a chance to say something about that. I mean, because you could take, and if you had this problem, you could take your kids elsewhere, right? You could find some non-vet, you could keep them in your home, you could do all these things. But if you're going to go to the free school here, then you got to play by the rules. And people are getting around, instead of fighting it and saying, we don't believe in this, they're just getting over on the system. And the system's too scared to say anything.
Right. I mean, and that's exactly right. I mean, the if you want to homeschool your kids and not vaccinate, you can do that. You know, this is, you know, the idea is we're going to protect all of the other children that go to the public schools by requiring people to vaccinate their children. So you have that herd immunity going on. I mean, I point out in the blog post, you know, the state doesn't usually accept there's philosophical objections to other things. If a libertarian said, I have a philosophical objection to paying taxes, the state would say, that's nice, but, pay up. You don't have a right to do that. Or, I have a philosophical objection to my tax dollars paying for war and killing. That argument has been made in court, and the courts have rejected that. No, you don't get to withhold your taxes because you don't like the way they're being spent. If you don't like the way they're being spent, vote for representatives who change it. But you can't just unilaterally withdraw your tax. So, I'm not aware of any court ruling that has said the state must give out these, exemptions. This is not really a First Amendment issue. It seems pretty clear from legal rulings that states don't have to. I mean, as I said, California, Mississippi, and West Virginia don't give any non-medical exemptions at all. So you do that. And it strikes me, you don't necessarily even have to go that far. If you're a state legislator and you want to protect people who, whose faith does have a genuine documented doctrinal objection, you could do that. And there are so few people that would meet that hurdle that it probably would make a difference in the larger scheme.
All right, we're coming right back. More with Brendan Kirby and heads up from our news partners at WKRG. Mobile County Sheriff's Office says a body is washed up near DIP along DIP today. They're looking for ID on the body. Of course, they referenced the missing fisherman from earlier this month. We'll get more on this story coming up.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
There's a good headline. Drug turf war battle turns Tijuana into one of the deadliest cities on Earth. Yeah, I guess we'll have to scratch that. I had a big family vacation to Tijuana planned, but looks like that isn't happening. Right, continue our conversation with Brendan Kirby, but I also want to grab a quick call because Derek in Fairhope has been hanging on for a long, long time, and we started off the hour. If you're just joining us here on the show, it came off of the previous hour, but a discussion of prisons I was having with State Senator Cam Ward, and then it morphed in because of a text about why don't we just privatize prisons, and I went on my little micro rant about privatized prisons, and Brendan had some very cool ideas, and Derek, if I know him like I do, I'll probably have his own take on it as well. Derek, hey, man.
Man, how long do I have to rant? I mean, let's just keep building prisons. You know what I mean? Let's just keep building prisons. Let's not look at any of the root causes of why we're doing it. Let's just spend all this money and let's just keep going. What's the logical train of thought on talking about the end result when an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Right, idealism. Okay, there's idealism and pragmatism in this, and I know you deal in both worlds, which is good. I don't want to just, be building prisons to stack them up, but this possibility of federal receivership if it knocked California like it did, what does it do to us here in Alabama, and what does it mean? I don't want arbitrary release of bad dudes and gals out there, but mostly bad dudes, not gotten themselves straight. They're now back out doing harm. That's what happened in California. You had people that were let out just because they had too many people. I don't want to see that happen.
No. So, try to sum all this up. It's a thought that I've really been, thinking about for a long time is, number one, we send them to jail. Let's just take Mobile County, for instance, and you've got that, that revolving door.
Mm-hmm.
If we take some of the low-level offenders, get them into some kind of trade, and that way maybe the recidivism, can be less. But when you go to privatizing, like you were saying before, Alabama, does have a system in place for private probation. Anybody that know anything about that, go on YouTube. This documentary, this chick just had like a driving without a seatbelt or, was one of those minor infractions. And it just escalated into thousands and thousands of dollars because a private company was handling her probation.
Sure.
It's to their benefit.
Absolutely. And if people are fair.
As many people as they can. And that is, if people aren't angry about that, look up CDC, corporate distinctions. They're on the Dow, or they're on the NASDAQ. A company, a private company that builds prisons that people invest in, and they go around, they build prisons, they staff them, and they've even sued, Colorado? Because they didn't give them enough inmates to fill the bed.
I think I do remember that story, and that's my issue with it. Listen, I am I am not bothered by the corporation trying to make money. That's what corporations do. It doesn't make them bad. I'm bothered by government systems that enable it. I mean, the company doing
let
what it's supposed to do.
Let them start writing legislation, you know. Just
that's
like
right.
Just said, let them start writing legislation. And if you don't think that's going to happen, well, then whenever they're doing all the budgets, who's in the room? Who's in the room when they're doing the energy, you know, whatever the big energy plans that we come out with every 4 years? It's the leaders in the industry. They're the ones writing the rules. This is a very slippery slope. And, you know, I think that if we focus on education, and maybe we cannot have so many prisons. If we can focus on the rehabilitation of teaching these guys how to weld, how to work on cars, how to build a house, then we give them another outlet. But, I mean, if we don't do something like that, then, I mean, why, you know.
Well, in the short term, though.
But one in my backyard.
And I appreciate it. I'm going to have to jump here. But, Derek, I always appreciate your calls. But in the short term, before – I like those ideas, too. I want to keep people out of prison, too, except the dirt bags that need to be in there. But in the short term, we're going to have to do something, and we can't hang on and wait for it. All right. And Brendan probably has got a whole head of steam now after that, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's ideally it's cheaper and better if you can prevent people from going to prison. But you know, we have drug courts that are designed to divert people out. We have pretrial diversion. We have probation. When people get to prison, I think people in the state a lot of times have the idea that, you know, people get caught smoking, you know, a marijuana joint and they get sent up to prison. I mean, to go to prison, unless you've done something really bad, it means you have failed at a lot of intervention programs along the way. And ultimately, you need the ability to put people in prison, because if they don't respond to those other, you know, lesser sanctions, and you don't impose prison, you know, then it's just a license to keep doing whatever you do. I mean, it's, you know, this complicated thing, obviously, if our school system was better, if there were fewer people that got addicted to drugs, there are these large societal problems that aren't easy to fix with a magic wand that would make things a lot better. But if you're just dealing with, we have X number of prisoners, we have X number of prison, you know, space in the prisons, they don't align and we have to do something about it, it means you either have to let people out now or build more prison space, which is costly. And, you know, even if these other things can be fixed, it's not going to be fixed in time to deal with the acute problem.
All right. So let's talk about, as we're building things and concrete things at that, I want to talk a bit about today, the dueling press conferences or dueling commentary. Speaker Pelosi saying, among other things, no wall funding. No wall funding. Now, we are have now till from now till February 15th for them to make a deal. And she has said no wall funding, although she did suggest that money should be, and I want your reaction to this, money should be spent for additional ports of entry. I can't figure out how that changes the subject of illegal immigration. I mean, they're not going through the desert because they can't find a convenient point of entry. They're going because they're crossing illegally. But the president saying...
What Nancy Pelosi is talking about is these are just refugees, you know. If we have a lot of ports of entry, mm-hmm. then they can come in an orderly way and make their asylum application.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about this before. Most of them don't actually qualify for asylum. And due to court rulings, if they're coming with children, you cannot detain the children, which means you either have to release the parents and keep the children, i.e. family separation, or you have to release the entire family. And I think I also told you this before, with the Central Americans coming, something like half of the Central Americans who claim a credible fear at the border and make it past that first stage and then are released into the country, only half of them even bother to apply for asylum once they get here. Because that's not the goal. The goal is just to get in the United States.
Right. I mean, there are some people...
This whole wall thing is a completely phony issue. This was not something that Democrats considered immoral until 5 minutes ago. They voted for fencing. It looked like there might be some movement of some members of Congress to include money for fencing, but not a wall. And then that gets
into how laughable that is. How laughable is that? I mean, how laughable is a semantics game? I mean, call it whatever the heck you want. You know, you can have some money for fence, but not for a wall. I mean,
right? Yeah. I mean, and you know, the fencing that we have now in parts of the border, which is what the official proposal is to build more of this. You know, it's a 14-foot high steel post that is about 6 inches in diameter and is driven 5 feet underground, buried in concrete, so it makes it hard to dig under. And you have a series of those that are next to each other and connected so that there's spacing in between so Border Patrol can see what's going on the other side, which is what they want anyway. If you want to call that a fence and not a wall, I mean, to me, it's irrelevant what you call it. And if that is the compromise, you know, if they if Trump has to concede that he doesn't get his quote-unquote wall, but he gets fencing like that, then that to me is a win-win. You know, we avert this phony crisis, and we put physical barriers in place that make the job of Border Patrol easier. I mean, this is something Border Patrol officers have told me. It's common sense. It's supported by data of border barriers that we have here and in other countries, and then we can, you know, move on to something else. But, you know, because Trump made this his signature campaign promise, and because the hatred of Trump is so high, this is like the hill that Democrats are willing to die on. And so Trump is not going to get anything that's called a wall, I don't think. But maybe he can get, you know, fencing.
I don't care... really what it's called, but I pointed out way back when, it has nothing to do with the money, since they're talking about, oh, we could spend money on these other things for border security, just not on the wall. Listen, I can go down the cliched road of, you know, how Democrats have called it medieval, and we go on all the list of things that are medieval that we're still using. I got it. But when things are floated out like this, we need more ports of it, we'll spend the money on more ports of entry, and nobody calls Speaker Pelosi on that. I mean, they call President Trump on a lot. They ask Speaker Pelosi questions of other things, but nobody in the press pool there goes, wait a second, is the real issue that people can't find, that people are breaking our laws because they can't find a convenient place to come across the border? I mean, how there are not flags thrown on that in a press conference, I don't know.
Yeah, and not only that, I mean, to the extent that this is a moral issue, or, you know, President Trump just wants to keep brown people out, and you hear that, it's important to keep in mind that these are all people that the country has already decided through its laws are not supposed to be in the United States. You know, this is not a wall thrown up to stop legal immigrants from coming who have the right to be here. It's designed to stop people who... You know, everyone agrees, at least nominally, don't belong here. They're people, they're foreigners who have no connection to the United States and don't have a legal route into the country. If the issue is that we should be letting more people in, then let's talk about changing
laws.
Well,
you know, and hey, you know, I like that. I like that, and that puts me, you know, at a crossways with a lot of people out there that just want to stop, you know, legal immigration and illegal immigration. I love I'm one of those suckers that still believes in the melting pot and bringing people in, and we are a better country when we have new people that yearn for the freedom and come here and go through the process and do it. I dig that. You know, I think that's a good thing, and I think we should look at what quotas and allocations for different parts of the world, and people want to come here and maybe tweaking those. I'm for that. But that's all a discussion of legal immigration. How that ends up getting thrown in the same discussion as somebody crossing the border illegally. I mean, they're different things, man.
Well, because there's an interest in blurring the line between legal and illegal migration, because Americans overwhelmingly don't think that special favors should be given to illegal immigrants. So, you know, that's the way you win the argument, is to make it sound like, you know, Trump wants to stop all legal immigrants. And look, he has endorsed proposals that would reduce legal immigration as well by shifting our priority away from family ties. If you have a a relative in the United States, then you can be sponsored and come in move away from that and move to our merit-based system, to where if you have education and skills that the country needs, that's how you get in. You know, something that's most closer to what Canada and Australia have. But that's a separate debate, you know.
And that's one that I might be on the other side
over
of,
yeah. What is the best way to stop the people that we've already agreed shouldn't be coming here, then it shouldn't be a moral issue. I mean, it's not like Trump has proposed laying a minefield along the U.S. Mexican border.
Okay, I mean, just to take this...
Maybe that would be worth shutting the government down over, but to the people who said, oh, I can't believe Trump was willing to shut down the government and cause all this turmoil just, you know, to get a wall, I mean, I sort of agree with that, but the flip side is also true, that the Democrats were willing to do that same thing just so we couldn't have a wall, you know, even though most of them have voted for border barriers in the past. It's a phony argument. As somebody pointed out in USA Today, if we can't reach an accord on that, you know, how are we going to solve the really challenging problems where there actually are really deep divisions?
I mean, if congressional hypocrisy were bricks, we would have the raw materials to build the wall tomorrow. I mean, that's clear and present to me. All right, before we run out of time here, so there's the framed debate. The president has painted himself into a corner, doubling down. Speaker Pelosi has done the same. February 15th is, 2 weeks away, basically, from now, a little over 2 weeks away. How do they strike a deal? I mean, I have a feeling that we're going to go right back into partial government shutdown.
Yeah, I mean, unless Trump's going to need something that he can come away with that says he's making progress to this. And if they call it a fence instead of a law, I think he'd go for that. If they say you can have some money for the wall, and then we're going to have amnesty for the Dreamers, you know, I think Trump might go for that. But they said no to that.
They said no to DACA already.
Yeah, no. I mean, they're going to need something along those lines. If it's just Pelosi and Schumer say we're not going to give you anything, right? And then we'll probably shut that again. They're emboldened because they beat Trump. I mean, they got Trump to back
down.
They
got a win, sure.
And there's no reason to think that it wouldn't play out in a similar fashion. And that's great from a political standpoint for the Democrats. They're on the high ground, and they can hurt Trump's popularity. But it means that they're willing, for the sake of beating Trump, they're okay with the disruption of a government shutdown as well. I mean, because they don't seem to really be looking for a way that could accommodate them on this. I don't think Trump's going to just say, okay, we'll take some drones and heat sensors and call it a day. I think he's going to hold out for something that can that he can tell people he's made progress on.
All right, Brendan, we'll have to talk about this more coming up, and I'm sure we'll have plenty of time between now and February 15th to talk with folks about this. Remind them, if they're looking for that commentary on vaccines or a whole bunch of stories, we can get your take on your website.
Yeah, you go to KirbyOnPolitics.com, and then just look for the drop-down bar that says Kirby's Take, and that has my latest blog post up, and you can scroll down and read earlier posts as well.
And remind folks, too, if they've yet to pick up their copy of Wicked Mobile, how do they do it?
Yeah, Wicked Mobile, they can get it at bookstores, they can get it online in May or June at the Books A Million in Mobile. They're trying to put together a local history author events to commemorate
cool.
the bicentennial. So I'll let you know more about that when the details are set on that.
All right, very good, Brendan. And remind folks on Twitter, where you stay, as the kids say.
Yeah, at Brendan K. Kirby.
All right, Brendan, we appreciate it. We're coming right back. More of Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. You grab a call or two. And Paul Feinbaum show on the way at 2.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
156 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. You'll say hello to my buddy Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins, also one of the hosts of Two Guys and Some Change. You can check them out Tuesday evenings right here at FM Talk 106.5. Hey, man.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. You and I were talking during the news break there about gold and silver bullion. And tell folks, I mean, it's been since June, but there's also been a change, too. If people are buying gold and silver bullion in Alabama now, they don't have to pay taxes like they used to.
Well, exactly. We've seen so many more people coming in now that they realize that, hey, that 10% penalty, as a lot of people look at it, that's gone away. So now if you had $100 in your budget to spend on gold or silver, you can come by Mobile Bay Coins. And when you spend that $100, you get $100 worth of silver, not $91 and $9 and some change in taxes.
I think
that has been a huge, huge change. Actually, had a lot of people wanted to do for a New Year's resolution to start to invest and hedge with some gold and silver bullion. So it's a great time.
Hey, do people do that? Like, you know, I know that from time to time, you know, I've come in and bought precious metals with y'all, but I have not done it the same way, you know, you'd like do a dollar cost average on stocks. Are there people that do that, like a monthly thing, you dollar cost average your precious metal purchase?
We have quite a few, yes. The short answer is yes, Sean. There's quite a few people that are coming in every pay period, and whether it's, you know, $20 or $200, they're buying some silver or some gold and just consistently doing that, putting that back in the safe, and using it as a hedge, sort of a little bit of an extra savings account. And when you really need it, it's going to be there. It's pretty awesome.
All right. Well, let's talk about coming by and purchasing some gold and silver bullion.
Yeah, we're right here in Midtown at 2204 Government Street. The selection we have right now is phenomenal. We've got pretty much every one of the new 2019 products in stock, from the Silver Eagles to the Panda Bears. You can check things out on our new website, mobilebaycoins.com. We'd love to have you come by and say hey.
All right, man. We will do just that, Angelo. I appreciate it, and we'll see you soon.
Have a good one, Sean.
You too. Angelo checking in from Mobile Bay Coins. By the way, too, just the easiest folks to talk to. I mean, you got questions. You want to make a part. You want to see, like, what's real out there, what's not real. Ron, Angelo, the whole crew there, they will absolutely take care of you. They are good people, so go see them. All right, on the way out of here, but we'll leave you with a Paul Feinbaum show coming up in just a second. And also, reminder, maybe you want to share that interview that I had with State Senator Cam Ward about prison, you know, prison questions here, building prisons, why there might be an executive action here to get an end around of the legislature, why Governor Kay Ivey may move to have a private company build prisons and then have the state rent them out. All those details in that podcast from last hour. It'll be posted up here in just a little bit over on our website, fmtalk1065.com. All right, y'all have a great one.